With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out: Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking, and yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
Bags are packed, are you ready to go? This time tomorrow we'll be on the road, riding with you in the sunnier.
It's time to name the neglect from typical food advice. Welcome to the Find Your Food Voice podcast, hosted by me, Julie Duffy Dillon. I'm a registered dietitian with 20 years of experience partnering with folks just like you on their food peace journey. What have we learned? Well, cookie cutter approaches exclude too many people, and you don't need to be fixed. It's not you. It's not me. It's all of us. Only together we can start a movement and fix diet culture. And we will. Let's begin with now.
I want to see how the world turns round. Let's go adventure in the deep blue sea. Home is with you wherever that may be. Home is with you wherever that.
Hey there, welcome to episode 357 of the Find Your Food Voice podcast. I am Julie Duffy Dillon, registered dietitian and host, and I am so excited to bring you today's episode. Today's episode may feel a little different when you're thinking about moving away from diet culture, recovering from your eating disorder, all the different ways that you may be trying to find your food voice. It's all about play. Playing with food, making a mess, and reconnecting to the joy that food can bring to our life. Even if that feels so far away, especially then, this episode is made for you. Do you have a fond memory of when you were a child getting something to eat that felt super special and it was delicious and it made you giggle, it made you smile, and probably made a mess? I know I have a few that are coming to mind right now for me. And Rachel, my guest, is also has some that comes to mind for her. And in this episode, like I said, we're going to be unpacking how playing with food can help you to move from this super complicated, stressed out kind of way of relating to food to one that has more peace, more calm, and also more fun. All right, we're going to get to today's episode after a quick sponsor break. Welcome back, Rachel, to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm good. How about yourself?
I am doing great. I'm excited to unpack this topic. Oh my gosh, my voice is not making sense today. I'm excited to unpack this topic on playing with food. And we are in the episode 350-something at this point, yet I don't recall an episode on this. And many, many clients that I worked with over the years have struggled with what we're going to talk about. So thank you for agreeing to talk about it, Rachel.
Of course. I'm really excited because when you first mentioned this topic, I thought about it in like a more literal, like, you know, being creative in the kitchen sense. And then when we started talking about it, you were like, no, I also actually literally mean playing with food. And I was like, that is so cool. And I'm really pumped to be talking about this.
I don't know what made me remember this concept, but this had to be at least 10, 15 years ago. I went to a conference and there was this like pre-conference workshop, which was all day. And it was all on playing with food with clients. And I was so excited to have an all-day session on this topic where we literally like got plastic tablecloths out and all the fun food you can imagine, like the messy, messy fun foods, whipped cream, icing, syrup, sprinkles, ice cream, like anything that melts and gets globby and is sticky and makes a mess just naturally in its natural state. And here's why I was excited. When clients would come in, they would often talk about, and also something that, I don't know if you know this, Rachel, or listener either, like I would do a lot of sessions with clients where we actually would eat together. And what I noticed is there was so much of like a routine of where the napkin would go, that there even was a napkin, how bites were taken, if bites were taken at all. Because sometimes people didn't even like taking a bite. They'd rather just pull it out and put it in their mouth instead of actually like taking a bite. And there was no mess at all. No, if there was a sprinkle involved, there was no sprinkle left on the floor, no drips of ice cream. I mean, it was so tidy. And if we think about how diet culture and food rules, how they show up, I always get a vibe of like rigidity and neat and tidy, never messy. So this concept of like playing with food, when I read about it in this conference workshop like description, I'm like, yes, this is what I would love for more people to experience, is just like being a kid again, where you could just like hold your ice cream cone after you got it from the ice cream truck guy and it's dripping all over you and just laughing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like lifting it off your hand and yeah.
Yes, like getting every last bit, or like eating Cheetos and the Cheetos are on your, the powders on your fingertips and like licking that off. These are things that in sessions with clients that we would work toward, again, to help like reconnect to the joy of eating.
With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking. And yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
And there may be someone listening be like, oh my gosh, but you're a dietitian. Like, what does it have to do with being a dietitian? Like, it's everything, because food is not like a mouth calculation only, you know, it's so much of it is like the pleasure we get from it. And what this workshop, what they talked a lot about is just the steps that it took to help people get to the point where they could play with food again. And you know, I can save you the 8-hour workshop time and price to just let you know that a lot of it is just exposure. It, what my clients and I would end up doing is I had a kind of a mini kitchen table in my office, and I would put like a plastic sheet, like a, what do you call it? What are the things we put over tables? What are those
like a
called?
Tablecloth.
Yeah, there you go. Tablecloth. Yeah. Words are lost on me today. Because I have not used a tablecloth in years, but we would get like a plastic tablecloth and it would just start with maybe scooping out some ice cream with a spoon and letting it just melt and just having it with us and maybe letting it be a little messy. It didn't always include like eating it. It was just being around it and feeling it. Same thing with like whipped cream or sprinkles, like intentionally making it a little messy. And over time, eventually incorporating eating the food too. And what was really interesting to see is how people would name some foods that they had childhood memories with. And as they, over time, again, this would take probably months, because it would just be every week just going a step further with getting to the point where someone would actually eat the food and get and tolerate kind of the mess with it. But eventually bringing up some really fun memories, how that would then enable the like bridge over into real life and being okay eating these foods at home and eating them with their family. And again, for me, finding your food voice has so much to do with reconnecting to the pleasure with food and not letting your complicated history with food to be like your complete future. You know, it's all about rewriting your fate to like include the fun again. And so for you, listener, I wonder if that's something that you can slowly start to incorporate into your life. And that's what part of this podcast is going to be including, is like some of the logistical ways to do this. And something I didn't mention that I meant to is another reason why I wanted to bring this up is just like the interaction with food, period, can be really stressful. And listener, I don't know if you struggle with this or know someone that has, but just like the process of actually like really just cooking, whether it's boiling water on the stove or measuring something to like make a recipe, going to the grocery store and getting all the ingredients, like just having all those things in your cart. I know for some people has been like a block for them. And playing with food, again, I see it as a way to get your senses, not just like taste, you know, but getting all of your senses used to all the different like parts of how we feed ourselves. So with that all being said, I'm putting you on the spot totally, Rachel, as I say this. So like you feel free to decline, but I'm thinking about what like playful food memories that I have. And I think it'd be kind of fun just to name some of them. And I have two in case you want to like think about them for a little bit. But like one that I think about and I would talk to my clients a lot about is when I was a kid on Saturdays, my parents would take us to like church services on Saturday night. And when I say Saturday night, it was an early service. I think it started at 4 or 5. And then after it was over, we'd go to Dairy Queen. And I don't remember the name of the thing I would get, but it was something that was brightly colored in a sherbet type thing, which I'm not even like someone who likes sherbet really, but I think I just like the brightly colored thing on a stick. But I remember sitting there and like, or like waiting for it at the like window, you know, when you would order. This was like a walk-up Dairy Queen, which I don't even know if they have those anymore. But, and then just sitting there with it and letting it drip all over my hand and in the hot sun of the summer and enjoying it. And then afterwards, we would go and watch The Muppet Show, which I don't know if you ever watched The Muppet Show, but that was like totally my youth. So we would kind of, we just have enough time to like enjoy it, to jump in the car and go home and watch The Muppet Show. We'd get there just in time for the two old men in the balcony to be like having their little discussions as the show is starting. So that's one. And then the other one, like at my home growing up, we didn't do a lot of baking, or I don't have a lot of memories of that, but I do have memories of making cookies and cakes at two different friends' houses. And both of their parents let us like lick the bowl and the mixer thingies, you know, and the spoon. They were like, they would let us do that kind of stuff. And so I can remember making, you know, like cake batter and icings and things like that, and just having so much fun, like scraping the bowl out, making a big old mess. And I don't remember eating the actual food that we made, but I do remember eating stuff like the cleaning the bowl out. So
probably the best part of baking things.
Right. And you know, this is so funny because I'm not a huge baker. But my oldest wanted to bake a cake last night. Again, this is very rare, so don't take this as like, oh, I do this all the time. But I say that just because, again, I'm not one to be doing a lot of baking. And she's like, can I make a cake? And I was like, oh yeah, let's do that. And so, you know, she did it. But that was the thing, the cleaning out the bowl, like licking the spoon and cleaning it out herself after making it, was
she was like, this was the thing I was looking the most forward to.
Totally.
So, oh goodness. So yeah, do you have any food memories that come to mind for you that are sort of playful?
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind, I've talked about it on the podcast before, but my dad was a chef. And so I grew up like around food. And I remember being, I don't know, 5 or 6, like pretty young, and like helping him, quote unquote, helping him make pizza dough for the first time. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember like sitting on the counter and the dough and the flour everywhere. And it just kind of like... being this like fun, funny thing that we were just like covered in flour and like that was okay to be and just like playing with the dough before actually making the pizza. And that kind of as a small kid, that transition of like, you know, I remember like playing with literal Play-Doh and kind of making that like connection to like, whoa, food can be similar. Like you can play with it just like you can play with Play-Doh. That's like, I think the key memory that comes to mind.
Aw, I love that. Yeah. And I, you know, hearing you say about like playing with it, like Play-Doh, that does remind me of the training. Like the people doing that pre-conference workshop talked a lot about like finger painting or Play-Doh and making food into like using it in a similar way. And when we're young and learning about our senses, that's why those are tools that help kids to just like develop the ability to manipulate with their hands and just learn about their world is through touch. And playing with food is a way to help your brain get reacquainted. You know, it's kind of going through those developmental milestones again in a way that has mended your relationship with food. So oh, thank you for sharing that memory, though, and again, for letting me put you on the spot. But let's go through some logistics, because we can talk about play, but if you are someone that just feels disconnected from food and needs to get reacquainted, we have some steps or some guidelines that we kind of put together, that Rachel actually put together for us, to help you to get reconnected in a concrete way. So, what should we start with, Rachel?
We could start at the beginning of the list, but I want to say, when you were talking earlier, something that like really stood out to me, you're talking about kind of making a mess and being okay with it, is I think part of the reason why I love cooking so much is because I am a very neat and tidy person, but I make a mess in the kitchen when I am cooking. Like I'm like a tornado comes through, I get stains on myself, which my partner does our laundry and like is always rolling his eyes at like how much I stain in my clothes and like just, I like make a huge mess and it's fun to do. Like that's kind of part of the joy. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there, that in that transition from literally playing with food in a therapeutic way to like working in the kitchen and feeding yourself, you can make a mess in the kitchen and that's equally as fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that's part of the big take home for me is it helps for all of us to play with different types of identities and to practice imperfection, to practice making a mess and mistakes, and especially cooking rather than baking. I think a lot about like, there's so much room to like experiment and it'll still taste fine, you know? So yeah, like I wonder for you listener, if you like let yourself to make a mess, what would that be like for you? And to try to practice tolerating it. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. But I think that our kind of tips fall into two categories. Some of them are more like practical, making sure you have basics to feed yourself. And some are more kind of getting you more used to like the creativity and the fun in the kitchen. So I guess we can start with the more creative, fun ones since we're talking about play.
Sure.
But for me, one of my favorite things to do is buy and collect or, you know, take out from the library cookbooks and start looking through them and just kind of putting, you know, post-its or whatever on the recipes that you think look interesting and maybe like starting you know, picking one recipe from a cookbook a week that looks exciting to cook and kind of turning it into like a fun event, put on some music, pour yourself a glass of wine or make some tea, invite a friend over, cook for someone else, and like make it an event and a special thing to kind of branch out and pick a new recipe to cook that still kind of gives you the guidelines of a written recipe with measurements. But it kind of might expand your repertoire and maybe like pick a cuisine that you don't normally kind of go to. So that's, I think, number one.
I love that. Let me actually add, can I add something really quick too? Two things that come to mind. One, the book Eat Up that you recommended to me. Ruby, is that the person's first name?
Tando, I think I'm mispronouncing her last
name. Tando, okay. We'll put the link in the show notes. Yeah. That book to me is this episode. Like, because it sounds like in the book, the author talks so much about just reconnecting to the mess and the play and the experimentation with being in the kitchen. And I loved that book. It was so fun to read. And if you've listened to any podcast episode before, you know I don't enjoy being in the kitchen. Like, I don't enjoy the cooking, but it made me want to do it. Like, if I wanted to do more of that. What I've decided is I love being around people who enjoy cooking, so I can hang out with them in the kitchen and I'll be their sous chef or something, but you know, and I'll eat the food.
We always do sous chefs.
Yes, I will volunteer. So that's one thing I wanted to add. And then the other one is with clients, sometimes what would happen when they would try new recipes is they would find themselves trying a new recipe like when they were already starving, maybe if they had kids at home or other people they were cooking for, people were like barking at them already. And so like, you may find it's easier on your psyche and logistics and also to like actually enjoy it if you can pick a time to do some of these, this like new recipe experiment when time is not an issue, when you're not starving, when you feel more grounded. So some of my clients would talk about making a recipe at like a snack time instead, or on a weekend, just when they had a little bit more time to not rush. So yeah, that's for me what a lot of the kitchen time ends up not being fun is when it feels rushed. So yeah, just wanted to throw that in there too.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I was going with the idea of kind of making it more an event, blocking out the time and having someone over, kind of having pour a glass of wine or tea, but also like have snacks. Like I'm a big snacker while I cook, so I'm not getting to the point where I'm hangry because I'm not nice to be around at that point. So yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, definitely for those new recipe times, give yourself the time to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. But related to that, I was thinking about when I was kind of in my eating disorder recovery and kind of getting back into the kitchen again, I found it easier to use other people as an excuse to cook nourishing meals. Like I would invite people over to cook for them. And then kind of as a byproduct, I was also feeding myself nourishing meals, but it kind of felt safer to remove myself from being like the center of attention or like the focal point of cooking and kind of having myself be one step removed. And you can combine that with, you know, picking new recipes from a cookbook. But if I was going to make a more elaborate meal, doing it for someone else instead of for myself kind of felt like a safer way to start.
Yes. I can see how that would be safer. And I would say too, like that would be a really great entry point for a lot of people. And if you find yourself only in that entry point, I would challenge you to start going for having some of the food yourself, you know? Because some people, yeah, they will find it's easier to cook for others, but then never consume it themselves. And yeah, so that I get a great entry point. And just make sure you just are aware, you know, if you stay stuck there, because you can stay stuck there forever. Yeah.
And when you're cooking for others, you know, try the food yourself as well. But
yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, definitely. But so those in my mind are kind of the more creative, fun things. Mm-hmm. But as we said, it's mm-hmm. also just important to nourish yourself multiple times a day, every day. And so yes. kind of more tips on that practical front, thinking through some safe foods for yourself. So, you know, think about categories of foods, proteins, carbohydrates, vegetables, et cetera. And write down if you have like one or two back pocket ways of cooking those things. Like, you know that you mm-hmm. know how to roast a chicken or, you know, saute a can of beans or cook a pot of rice or steam a vegetable or roast a thing. Like, kind of have those simple ways that you know how to make some basic foods that you can put together to create a meal. So if you're stuck and you're feeling overwhelmed in what to cook, I know that I can easily make some rice, roast a vegetable, mm-hmm. and roast a piece of chicken. And that way mm-hmm. I'm having a balanced meal. And I would mm-hmm. also say related to that, like, we're talking about cooking, but as a caveat, like, it doesn't have to be cooking. It could just be like,
yes,
I know a safe meal for me is having a Trader Joe's chicken tikka masala frozen meal mm-hmm. and having it stopped. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be cooking, yeah. but just kind of having those back pocket safe ways of ensuring that you're getting food.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, those Trader Joe's and any other company that makes frozen food, thank you, Jesus, for those meals. Because especially, you know, I'm thinking about for any listener who does feel really uncomfortable, like preparing, touching food, just having lots of food around, like those frozen meals allow for so many people to get fed. And then also if someone is short on time or because of a disability, they're not able to do a lot of food prep, like it helps people actually get nourishment. And if you're wanting to incorporate the playfulness too that we talked about, like I think about having a super safe food, which, you know, I guess it's like when you mentioned safe food, I'm like, there may be some foods that feel very safe. You know, and maybe that's the chicken or something. And you have a way to prepare that, maybe like heating up some chicken nuggets or something. But then when you're wanting to challenge things with this idea of playing with food, adding something to it that could be a little messy, a little different, a new recipe, like letting that safe. Yeah. Yeah. Like letting that safe food to kind of anchor and provide some stability. But then challenge just like a little bit of a stretch. And what's cool is like doing that, you may notice that over time, this also adds some ability to get out of your comfort zone in other areas. You know, it's kind of neat how it dips into other things. So yeah, I love that. Like, I love that we can kind of decide when we want to challenge the overwhelm, you know?
Yep. We still have our ways of nourishing ourselves at a baseline. Mm-hmm. And then we can kind of decide mm-hmm. when we want to step yes. out of our comfort zone a little bit.
Yes. Yes. All right. What's next?
So the next thing that I would recommend doing is taking an inventory of your kitchen, your pantry, like what mm-hmm. you have. You know, most people have kind of the grains they normally stock, the canned goods they normally stock, the spices they normally stock, the sauces, whatever it is, and kind of take a look at what you have and what you normally have. See if there's anything that jumps out at you as something that you might be like excited to try and use. Maybe you bought yourself a special kind of like hot sauce that you thought looked interesting, but then it's been sitting in your fridge mm-hmm. and you haven't known what to do with it. If there's anything that like jumps out at you as something that you're excited to try, kind of jot that down and then make a list of everything you have and put it into categories. So like you have your categories of like your proteins that are kind of stocked in your house, the carbohydrates you have stocked in your house, the fat sources you have stocked in your house, et cetera. And that way you can kind of connected to the last one, look at those lists and say, okay, tonight I'm going to use this can of black beans as my protein and fiber source. And I'm going to use this pasta as my carbohydrate source, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And something that I'm excited to soft launch is that in the spring, I'm going to start offering one-on-one support to folks to kind of do this, to help gain confidence in the kitchen in a like eating disorder recovery safe way, where I'll like help you kind of go through this process of taking an inventory of your kitchen and like from there brainstorming easy safe meals with maybe a creative flair on them that you can make, and like then providing, you know, text message support as you're kind of going through this process of learning to cook. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that because that's the type of support that so many clients would talk about wanting. And for folks who maybe who are in an eating disorder recovery, who went to residential treatment, which if you're listening, you're like, what the heck's residential treatment? It basically means someone goes to a treatment facility for weeks to months to help recover from their eating disorder. And for some treatment facilities, getting used to cooking for oneself again is a part of it. Too many do not include that. But many people talked about how that was so important just to get, again, to get like the body like energetically, like just like that somatic experience in the kitchen, like touching the food and the pots and the pans and opening the cabinet and seeing food without feeling overwhelmed. You know, for a lot of people, just having all that food at home can feel scary. And so just getting used to that again. So I'm so excited you're going to provide this service. And, you know, you're the only anti-diet chef I know. And maybe Ruby, who wrote that book we were talking about too. But you know, she's in the UK, right? So you're the only one stateside that I know. And what a great service to offer, because yeah, I can see like logistically it can help someone have like a way to hold someone's hand as they're just exposing their brain, their emotions, their thoughts, like all that to the actual like taking care of yourself with food experience. So super excited for that.
Yeah, I am too.
So I know meal prepping is a big thing that you talk about in an anti-diet way, which I love so much. So let's talk about that part.
A long time ago when I was immersed in diet culture, did a lot of rigid meal prepping and kind of the way that you often think about meal prepping. But since being in recovery, have kind of shifted what that looks like to kind of understand that preparing to have food in my house is meal prepping in and of itself. So like doing a full stock grocery shop, having, you know, maybe it's having vegetables and fruit washed and cut. So when I want a snack, it's ready. Having, you know, hummus or other dips that I can use to make a meal. If maybe if it's, you know, I have extra time, it's like making a soup or a chicken broth that I can use in a bunch of different ways. But thinking through the week I have ahead, how much time and bandwidth I think I'm going to have to cook, and making sure that I have foods either prepared or not to fit into my week so that I know that I'm not kind of by default just ignoring hunger cues and ignoring the fact that I need to eat because I'm too busy or I'm overwhelmed or what have you. So I think that that is really important. And again, going back to, it doesn't have to be foods that you cook. It can just be, meal prepping can be as easy as realizing, you know, I'm really busy this week with work and I know that I'm going to be tired at the end of the day. And so this week when I go grocery shopping, I'm going to buy a bunch of prepared foods.
Yes. And oh my gosh. So, I hope everyone has permission for that.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to pick up the rotisserie chicken. I'm going to, you know, whatever it is.
Yes. Especially when my kids were super young and it was hard to like eat a meal with both hands. I would make sure every time I went to the grocery store, I came home with like some kind of frozen meal, like something I just had to pop in the oven or in the microwave in order to finish dinner. I was like, I always have to have at least one of those. I don't care if I included it or I didn't think I needed it, but I always used it. I always needed, like there was always a day that was like, I've had enough with making decisions, adulting in general, or these wines. So we are going to do this microwave macaroni and cheese tonight. So much of meal prepping for me too, I don't know if you think about it this way, Rachel, but like so much of it I think of is like taking care of your future self and like, what does your future self need? Just your relationship with food in general, so much of it is to me also like thinking about, yeah, what does my future self need in order to be kind, compassionate, and to help just to get through the next moment. And I do love though that you always mention, you know, meal prepping or whenever you talk about food, like normalizing the not cooking aspect, you know, a lot of times what I think about the type of food that I prepare is more assembling than cooking. And you've always been so like permission giving with that, like, great job, Julie, you know? So I love that. Yeah. Just making sure there's enough in whatever way that makes sense for you, and maybe even give yourself a little extra room by, you know, thinking about an even easier method for at least one meal that's coming up in the future, because your future self may have a shitty day or just needs a break. So I love that.
Always, and we're talking freezer stocked with at least one easy meal.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. And I'm picturing my freezer right now. Yes. There always are these like chicken strips that my kids will always eat and, I don't have to worry about, and definitely some Trader Joe's, meals. Amy's frozen meals are my favorite, like individual ones. Yes. Lots of things like that. And I know there's a lot of people that, and I have a feeling you do this too, Rachel, but that do like individual, or not individual, but like meals that you just prep and then put in the freezer yourself, like you actually like chopped and things like that. But I know we're talking so much about like the actual meals, but we don't just eat meals, right?
No, we eat snacks too.
We need snacks. It's normal. Let's normalize snacks.
Yes, let us normalize snacks. And I, as a side note, I feel like I'm in a snack rut right now. I'm kind of bored with all of these snacks.
Oh, let's talk about.
Listener, you have snacks you're excited about, let us know, because I can use some new snack ideas. I feel like I've been big on snacking recently and I'm just bored with everything. So
yeah, send that email directly to Rachel, info@juliadelanrd.com, and we'll get Rachel some new snack ideas.
Please, I need them.
Yes.
But yes. But related to that, it's important when you're grocery shopping or you're planning your meals for the week to not just think about like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but also what snacks are you going to need in between? I feel like diet culture, one of the many things it's robbed us of is the idea of snacking, but like normalize snacks. It's normal to need to eat in between meals, and it's important to like plan for those snacks. So when I said part of my meal prepping sometimes looks like cutting up fruits and veggies and having dips prepared, part of that is like for snacking. But yeah, whether it's that. Prepackaged snacks or, you know, fresh produce or a combination or dairy, whatever it is, just make sure you have it in the house.
Yes. And this is where some playfulness can come in, because I think a lot about like cookies, ice cream, cake. I don't know. Those are the ones that come to mind for me. Those are great snack options. And the other thing that I would often get pushback on, sometimes I would suggest things that were used in a meal as a snack, like whether it's like a sandwich or leftovers. And I know for some people, the reason they would push back is they're like, that's a meal. That's not a snack. I'm like, well, you know, you can decide how much you're going to eat of it, you know, and like a sandwich for a snack is not unusual. Like a PB&J as a snack can be a wonderful thing. And I know for me, like it's like a snack time and I'm like getting hungry. And if I see some leftovers, like leftover pasta or something, I'm like, yes, this is going to be perfect. So, you know, allow yourself to have things that maybe aren't labeled snack foods as a snack. And then also this is a great place to bring in that play, have some playful food and like let yourself experiment with that part and notice how your mind like and your body kind of respond to it. And I say that because sometimes that playfulness can be really upsetting or activating a part of some eating disorder rules or some diet culture bullshit. And remember that after a snack, you know, you do need the meal that's going to be coming up, even if you ate something scary, because you still need to eat again. So,
and I know constant in life, you've got to just
really
keep eating.
Totally. And I think that's, of course. And, you know, eating and drinking, you know, it's something that, as someone who's like, really witness a lot of food behaviors because of, you know, every hour I would sit with a client and they would go so into like a thorough recall of what they're eating and drinking. We make so many food decisions every single day, like hundreds of food decisions every single day. So if you're like, why is this like finding my food voice like journey so fucking exhausting? Well, it's because you have to decide so many times to do what to like reject diet culture basically. So with that all being said, I know we need to wrap up because we are totally over time, but that's just how we and Rachel, just that's how we go. We just love to talk. But I hope this helps you to have some logistical ways to incorporate enough food. That's our number one message always. Make sure you're eating enough. And then ways to sprinkle on, pun intended, some play. So anything before we leave? Any other like parting thoughts for you, Rachel?
Just have fun with your food and send me your snack ideas.
Yes, we need the snack ideas. info@juliedillonrd.com. Well, thank you so much, Rachel. Have a great day.
You too.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation about playing with food with Rachel. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast and supporting the show. Many of you have asked how to support the show, and there are some really easy, free ways that you can support the show that actually help us tremendously. One in particular is to listen to the ads that we put in the show. Those are like the way that we get paid is actually if people listen to the actual ads. So even if you never do anything with it, skipping them means we don't get paid. So listening to them helps us to be able to pay for editing and all of the production that goes into this show. So thank you in advance for doing that. The other way, of course, is to leave a 5-star review in Apple or Spotify. Also subscribing or following the show. You can do a lot of these by clicking on the 3 little dots on the right. And by subscribing or following the show, it is mutually beneficial because it helps you to not miss a show. And that helps me when you don't miss a show too. You can also share an episode with a friend. Doing all these things again really helps us to be able to continue with the podcast and continue to spread the word that diet culture is an asshole. And you know, we all deserve to have a relationship with food that feels at home for us. All right, so that's enough for this episode of the Find Your Food Voice podcast. I look forward to being with you next time. Until then, take care.
Thank you for listening. I am Julie Duffy Dillon, and this is the Find Your Food Voice podcast. Ready to join the anti-diet movement and take the Food Voice Pledge? Go to julieduffydillon.com and sign your name to the growing list of people saying no to diets and yes to their own food voice. The Find Your Food Voice podcast is produced by me, Julie Duffy Dillon, and my team of kick-ass folks. I couldn't make the show without Yelly Cruz, assistant producer and resident book fiend, and Colleen Bremner, customer service coordinator and professional hype master. Audio editing is from Toby Lyles at 24 Sound. Music is Fly Free by Hartley. Are you looking for episode transcripts? Get them at julieduffydillon.com, where you can also submit letters for the podcast, give us feedback, and sign the Food Voice Pledge. We need your voice to end diet culture. We literally can't do this without you. Subscribe to the Find Your Food Voice podcast to get weekly inspiration and education on how we can defeat diet culture and reclaim our own food voice. I look forward to seeing you here next week for another episode of the Find Your Food Voice podcast. Take care.
With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking, and yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.